Mary G. Martinez, Justice Freidenberg is recused from this matter. You may approach. Mr. Yeager, good morning to you.
Good morning.
I'm going to apologize ahead of time. My voice is a little bit recovering from an illness, so hopefully you can hear me. My name is Jared Yeager. May it please the court. I represent Larry Martinez. This is an appeal of the denial of a hearing for post-conviction relief. The jury in the original trial in State versus Larry Martinez was tasked with the question of deciding whether this was whether first-degree murder had been committed. And within that instruction, they had been asked to decide whether or not there had been deliberation, premeditation, intent committed by Mr. Martinez in the killing. They had been asked to decide whether or not he had the capacity to avoid rash decisions, the capacity to consider the probable effect of his actions, and whether or not he had the capacity to form the intent to kill. They were asked to decide those without the benefit of what we know now, and that is that two credentialed doctors after this jury trial found Mr. Martinez to suffer from a diminished capacity. That they concluded that he was incompetent to actually stand trial or be sentenced at that point. Even the state's doctor at that time conceded that Mr. Martinez had a diminished capacity. Yet none of this was presented to the jury. So the state's going to emphasize that Mr. Martinez was eventually found to be competent to stand trial. And that's absolutely true, but it misses the point that the question of whether or not someone is competent to stand trial is a different legal and psychological question than whether someone has the capacity to commit a crime.
How are the standards different?
Well, I'm not a doctor, so I can't say with specificity the difference between capacity to commit a crime, essentially insanity, and the standard of how to determine whether or not someone's incompetent to stand trial. But I know that in law, we hand the question of competence to stand trial to a judge, whereas we hand the decision whether someone's incapacitated to a jury. And one of the critical issues is their mental state at the time of trial versus the mental state at the time of the act. And we never had the opportunity, because weren't granted an evidentiary hearing, to determine whether or not these doctors would in fact say that he was of insufficient capacity to commit the crime or to form deliberation, premeditation, and intent at the time of the act.
Does your post-conviction petition spell out what these doctors would have said? What does the petition tell us about what the doctors would have said?
Well, I would concede that the motion itself is fairly conclusory in that he had diminished capacity. Without knowing what those doctors would have said about his capacity at the time, I think it's Mr. Martinez or me on his behalf is where I'm unable to identify with specificity the factors that would have supported his lack of capacity. But he was found by one of the doctors to have an IQ of 57. That's far below what we would typically say that a person had the wherewithal to commit an intentional act.
Mr. Martinez's motion for post-conviction relief was filed pro se.
That's correct.
At what point was counsel appointed?
I provided him assistance in drafting that. But he submitted it on his own. I did a pro bono list.
Thank you.
But the, I'm sorry, but trial counsel and direct appeal counsel were the same?
That's correct. The other impact that it had, I mean, this is a strange case. I mean, I can't ever think of a case where I've heard of a competency investigation happening after the jury trial but before sentencing. At least I've not been involved in anything like that. I think it was clear from the testimony of Mr. Martinez's lawyers at that time that they just simply overlooked it. There were things that he did after the jury trial, specifically, this is a first-degree murder trial. He was just found guilty. It's clear that the remedy for that is a life sentence. He inquired with them, how many years am I going to receive? And at that moment, it clicked that throughout this trial, they believed that he had a hearing deficit that was impacting their communications with him. But in that moment, they knew that he had not been recognizing the counsel he had been receiving throughout. And other things that they learned after that fact. And that was lended credibility by the two doctors that they found. And I think Dr. Moore has been referenced in many cases before this court. So these aren't people that they just pulled off the street to generate these opinions. Ultimately, the district court found that he was sided with the state's doctor that he was maligning. But even that doctor conceded that he had a diminished capacity. So we have a case where it was prosecuted or defended throughout prior to the jury trial without utilizing diminished capacity as a defense. That's not a defense you give up if you know you have it. I don't know exactly what the trial counsel would say their reasoning is, because I wasn't given an evidentiary hearing in this case in order to explore that question. The other impact of not following up on this diminished capacity is how it would have affected the pretrial motion to suppress. The state would argue that voluntariness was decided by the trial counsel, but who can be confident in that decision knowing that the trial judge had no evidence before him of the defendant's mental status.
Do you contend that the officers in that interview that is you've made the subject of the post-conviction action, do you contend that the officers acted in a coercive manner when questioning Mr. Martinez? And if so, what did they do that was coercive?
I can't recall precisely the questions that were asked of Mr. Martinez, but I think there was ample evidence submitted related to his hearing deficit that he had a tendency to, he was a pleaser. He wished to, he would gloss over things that he had misheard in order to just be agreeable with people. I think that question is impacted by his mental status, but that was not presented.
My question was, did the officers do anything that was coercive? And if so, what was coercive?
I can't specify a particular question about the officers, but in general, officers are this is an every case situation where an officer is trying to determine, get a statement from the defendant, whether it be in his best interest or not. And in this case, they're investigating a murder and they believe him to be the person who committed the murder. So this is a coercive environment by its very nature.
I watched the video and I'll just tell you, it seemed pretty laid back, actually. Would you disagree with that? I mean, the officers, he was not cuffed, and the officers were kind of just engaging in a conversation with him. Would you dispute that characterization?
No, I wouldn't, but I would also say that that's generally a tactic, as much as any other. I'm not saying that it's the same as, you know, twisting his arm or putting a gun to his head, but it's obviously a tactic to put someone at ease, and a person that is, of this person, of Mr. Martinez's mental capacity, that actually exacerbates the problem that he's predisposed to, and that is he doesn't have the insight to recognize what's being asked of him. I may be going too far within that conclusion, because that's not necessarily a specific medical evidence that's been before the court. We would ask that the court reverse this, send it back for an evidentiary hearing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Tangeman, good morning again.
May it please the court, I'm Erin Tangeman, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska. The state submits that the district court was correct by denying the post-conviction motion without an evidentiary hearing. Martinez's post-conviction claim is that his trial counsel was ineffective for failing to investigate his mental status and argue that he had diminished mental capacity, both as it relates to his statement to law enforcement and to the elements of his conviction.
Part of the district court's reasoning was that it could have been raised on direct appeal. Do you believe that that reasoning has merit?
No, I think that the district court's order reflects that the district court didn't quite understand the post-conviction claims. I don't agree with the procedural bar portions of that order, and I think even maybe some of the conclusions regarding the ineffectiveness was questionable, because I don't think the post-conviction motion was going to competency anymore. We are now talking about mental capacity to commit the crime. Since we are under a de novo review for this court, I didn't really rely on the district court's order in my brief. I think, well, first of all, the state questions whether or not Martinez has even made sufficient allegations regarding diminished capacity. I think the motion jumps to the conclusion that low IQ automatically equals diminished capacity without alleging that he actually lacked the ability to intend the consequences of his act. He also makes no allegations that the defense experts would have testified at trial that he lacked the mental capacity to commit murder. For purposes of this argument, however, I will set that aside, because I also think that his ineffective claim is affirmatively refuted by the record. Regarding the convictions themselves, we are now in post-conviction ineffective, so Martinez has to show, as this court held in State v. Golka, that a diminished capacity defense likely would have succeeded at trial, and the state believes he cannot make such a showing. First, he solely relies on the testimony of the experts at the competency hearing, and he ignores the state's experts. It states expert who found that Martinez had a greater functional capacity than his testing showed, that he often malingers and underperforms when it benefits him. So we don't even have experts all agreeing on his intellectual capabilities. Moreover, his intellectual capabilities, I think, are demonstrated by the cold and calculated murder he committed and his actions following that murder. He drove to Mandy's location with the intent to kill her. He told law enforcement that he shot Mandy, that he knew he was going to shoot Mandy, and that he planned to shoot her after he received a text message from her that made him angry. Just prior to the shooting, he was heard saying, "This is for you, bitch." And approximately 1 week before the shooting, he told his roommate, "I am going to kill that fucking bitch." After the murder, he told his roommate that he shot Mandy. He then hid the gun and he fled town in his vehicle. He knew exactly what he was doing at the time he shot Mandy, and there is not a reasonable probability that a diminished capacity defense based solely on his IQ testing would have succeeded at trial. Regarding the voluntariness of his statement based on his IQ, I think the video recording is the best evidence and speaks for itself and supports the district court's finding that Martinez was not of a diminished capacity. He had no difficulty conversing with the officers. He followed along, he engaged with them, he tracked questions, responded appropriately to answers. He never acted confused. He provided detailed and conversational answers to the question. There's simply no evidence in that videotape that his will was being overborne because of his intellectual functioning. We believe that the record refutes this claim of ineffective assistance also, and we ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. Mr. Yeager, thank you for your pro bono work. And with that, the court is adjourned for the day, and you are excused.